This is Robin Collier, KCI 90.1 FM, Red River Taos, and we're here in the studio with Consuelo Luz and Jamie Bernstein, who is Leonard Bernstein's daughter, and she's here speaking about her book, Famous Father Girl, A Memoir of Growing Up with Bernstein. So welcome, Jamie. It's great to have you here.
I'm thrilled to be in Taos.
Great. And we're going to talk about more than the book. You've done quite a bit of other things as well. And you started out, you know, trying to be a musician, but you transitioned to being do a lot of interpretive work with music, narrating concerts and explaining things. And this book goes through what it was like to grow up with this superstar father of yours. So first tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, the book came out in June of last year.
Yeah.
And then this June, it came out in paperback. So I've been very busy crisscrossing the country and talking about my book in front of this and that group. And it's been wildly gratifying because I've discovered that there is still in our world this gigantic Leonard Bernstein fan base.
Yeah.
Who are so emotionally connected to my dad and his music and who he was in the world. And so they come out in droves to hear more about his life through my telling of it,
right?
Through my own life. And so it's very gratifying to give these book talks all over the place.
And we have Consuelo here because both of your mothers are from Chile. So you've known each other for quite a long time, and you both speak Spanish because of your mothers. And you just recently made this film called Crescendo, The Power of Music, which followed three inner city kids, two from West Philadelphia and one from New York's Harlem, participating in a program that started in Venezuela.
That's
bringing
right.
Kids from the barrio to play violin and trumpet. And this has spread all over the world. And I watched the film last night, and I was so impressed with it.
Thank you. Well, it's an exciting story. And I'll just tell you a little bit about how I discovered this, you know, Music for Social Change program, which began in Venezuela, and it's called El Sistema.
Right.
I didn't know anything about that. But one day, about, you know, 12 or more years ago, I was just idly scrolling through Facebook, and someone posted a video of this curly-headed guy conducting this incredibly young orchestra, and they were playing the mambo from my dad's musical West Side Story. Uh-huh. So I thought, oh, well, this will be cute to watch for, you know, 10 or 15 seconds. And I basically fell into my computer screen with excitement. The kids were so full of joy.
Yeah.
And they were dancing around with their instruments, twirling their violins in the air, laughing and jostling each other, but also playing like virtuosi.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was so astonishing. And I was laughing and I was crying watching this and thinking, oh, where is my dad to see this?
Yeah.
Because we lost him in 1990. So I don't think he ever knew about El Sistema, even though it had started back in the 70s in Venezuela. But now El Sistema has become this global movement.
Right.
So when I discovered that it was coming to the United States, my friend Elizabeth Kling and I decided to make some sort of a documentary about that process and to explore how this program was being adapted here in this country.
Well, of course, your father was very instrumental in bringing classical music to young people.
He sure was. And that's one of the reasons that I thought El Sistema was so exciting, because of course, my father had those young people's concerts on television with the New York Philharmonic for years and years, and he really had such a gigantic impact on more than one generation of viewers who became music lovers because of those young people's concerts. I hear it everywhere I go.
Right.
People come up to me both in audiences and in orchestras, and they say something like, well, I grew up in Podunk, Montana, and we didn't have live music, but I used to watch your father's young people's concerts, and that's why I'm a music fan today, or that's why I'm playing the oboe in this orchestra today.
Well, what's fascinating about this film is it follows these three kids, And it starts out with they're just learning to play. I mean, they're struggling with
That's right. They're starting from zero.
Yeah. And then you follow them. Is it is almost 3 years that you follow them? I mean, I can't tell.
Nearly, yeah.
Yeah. And they get better and better. And they have all these struggles with, there's particularly one boy that his father wants him to get good grades in school. And he thinks this whole thing is just a distraction from doing that. And the other thing that you feature in this is these teachers, these music teachers are so gifted in really connecting with these kids and inspiring them.
Exactly. Oh, and what I was going to say about my dad, not only was he so dedicated to sharing the excitement he felt about music with young people, but also he spent his entire life doing everything he could to try and make the world a better place.
Yeah.
He was such an activist. And so when I discovered this El Sistema movement coming out of Venezuela, where they were using youth orchestras to bring social change to these very challenged communities, it was as if everything my father cared about in his life had been combined into one program. And that's what really made it so exciting for me.
I mean, it's sort of like with these kids, they're coming from the inner city, they face all kinds of challenges, and they take up this instrument, and suddenly the whole world opens up. They can be anything. You know, one of the girls says, I'm going to be a pediatrician. And her friend says, no, you're going to be a nurse. No, I'm going to be a pediatrician. And it's just, that's where music and playing, it changes your whole attitude toward life, basically. I mean, I took viola to start in California. My father taught at San Francisco State. We moved to California. We're from here. And they had, starting in fourth grade, every kid in school could take music lessons. And you got an instrument.
I started playing
viola in fifth grade. I went on to study with the first chair of the San Francisco Symphony.
Wow.
I wasn't that good at all. But it changed my whole point of view about everything. You know, I mean, and even though I never went on to be a musician or anything, it influenced how I became independent, how I could do things myself. And that's what these kids were learning. You can do this on your own.
Right. Well, this was the great revelation that the founder of El Sistema, José Antonio Abreu, had. When he first began it, his idea was just to have this place that the school kids could go every day when school was over to get them off the dangerous streets and give them a safe space. But then he rapidly realized that not only was he giving the kids a safe place to be, but that an orchestra is a kind of template for a world that works. And when you're in an orchestra, you have to listen to everyone else. You have to practice empathy. You have to concentrate,
cooperate.
So you're pretty much getting a skill set that will serve you your whole life, no matter what you wind up doing. And this was the great genius of the program.
And I just want to throw in a little, I don't know if you
could. Sure.
A little bit of a political angle on this. You know, the two countries in South America that are villainized for being socialist, in Venezuela and Cuba, the appreciation for music in these two countries. I've been to Cuba. I did a music project there. The musicians there are honored by the government. They are actually paid to be musicians.
Right.
And in Venezuela, this El Sistema was really, Hugo Chavez, he championed that program in a way that was, I mean, it expanded. I mean,
yeah.
He may have done other things that, you know, that were criticized, but during his reign, so to speak, this program flourished.
And I actually give a lot of the credit to José Antonio Abreu, who was the world's greatest diplomat, and figured out how to talk every different government that came in, every new iteration of a Venezuelan government, he would persuade them to support this Sistema program so that it would continue to expand and thrive. And so it wasn't just Chavez.
Right.
It started way before Chavez.
But he definitely saw the good in this and supported it full-hearted.
Yeah, Chavez saw that it would burnish his reputation well, because it was the jewel of the country. And I don't need to tell you how heartbroken I am by now, because I went down to Venezuela many times and made many, many friends through the Sistema movement. And I swear every one of those people has left the country by now.
Well,
and to see them all going down this way is just
here in Taos. We have Debbie Vincent, who has the chocolate shop. She's the granddaughter of Jenny Vincent, the great folk singer, but she's Venezuelan, you know. Jenny's son moved to Venezuela and married a Venezuelan, and so we have more Venezuelan influence here. The other thing was that the film showed the friendship, the cooperation, this boy with the dreadlocks. He said, "I was antisocial. When I got into the orchestra, I had friends. I saw that I could, you know, be part of a community that I..." And again, people just don't realize how important the arts, dance, music, to making a child take hold of themselves and take responsibility for themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, I'm the wrong person to ask because I'll just go on a rant about how, you know, our educational environment in this country has it all exactly backwards. And they think that when the budget runs low, the first thing they should cut is the arts, where it's the thing that infuses everything else.
Right. So tell us some more about the book. This, by the way, this film, in the Taos News, it said it was on Netflix, but actually it's not on Netflix
anymore. It was, but no longer. Yes.
It is on Amazon, though, so Amazon
Correct.
Prime. So
and right. iTunes.
And iTunes, okay, so yeah. So definitely watch that. It doesn't have a strong... It just follows these kids. There's, you know, you have to kind of find out what's happening, but it's by the end you just love these kids and the teachers.
And what is the name of the film?
Crescendo, the Power of Music.
Okay. So and my private joke with myself about the title of that film is that it gave me an opportunity to spend the rest of my life correcting everyone when they misuse the word crescendo, because people think it means the crash at the endo, like the climax. But it actually means growing in Italian, and it means that the music is growing gradually
right,
louder
right.
and louder, right?
Right.
So I get to explain
organic,
that
yeah.
over and over again.
Now, of course, you know, your mom had three kids. You are very close, all three
yes,
of you.
Yes, we are.
And you grew up in this family with this superstar. Leonard was just driven. I mean, I looked at the Wikipedia, the number of symphonies he conducted. It just goes on and on and on. I don't know how he did all this.
It's amazing how much you can get done when you never sleep.
I see.
He was a terrible insomniac, so he basically lived two lives in one.
Okay. But you were in the middle of this. I mean, there's these photographs in this other book that you worked on. It's called Leonard Bernstein 100, The Master's Photographs of the Maestro. You work together to get put together. The photographs in it are just fantastic of Leonard. And there's a New York Times review of it that has about at least 10 or 12 of the photographs. It's quite a nice sampling of that book.
Yes, that book came out beautiful.
Yeah.
And so this book, just like my other book, the bigger one that I wrote last year, both of these books came out in my father's centennial year.
Right, right.
He would have turned 100 last August.
Okay.
So it's pretty heady stuff when you have two books published in 1 year. But one is mainly the photographs, and I just helped
But,
put
I mean,
it
there's
together.
This photograph of him conducting, and you're sitting down. You're this little girl in pigtails, and just you're just, like, surrounded by this. I mean, what was it like to be part of his life with the music?
Well, exactly. My brother and sister and I get asked this question a lot.
Yeah.
People are just so curious to know, what was it like to grow up in a family with that larger-than-life, you know, blinding son for a father? So my short answer is that it wasn't boring. But the longer answer is my book, and that's why I wrote the book, because...
Right.
Because it was an interesting life, and there were many aspects of it that were worth telling a story about.
And it was, I mean, you reveal some pretty painful things, too, basically. I mean, it's not easy being part of a celebrity's life like that.
No, it's not. And what happens is that, I mean, every family in the world has its ups and downs. There's no such thing as human life without struggle and pain and all the rest of it. It's just that in a family where you have a larger-than-life personality, it makes all the ups and downs also be larger than life.
Right.
But that's why it makes a good story, because everything is sort of, you know, shimmering around the edges with more drama and more astonishing circumstances. And so that's how it was in our family. And luckily for us, even though we had some very painful episodes and genuine heartbreak. Our family connectedness was so strong that it was able to keep us together and help us, you know, ride the bumps and get through and come out the other side still connected and full of love. So that was our lucky break.
And you were lucky enough, apparently, I don't know when you started, you actually kept a journal. That must have been very helpful in writing the book, yeah.
Very helpful. I didn't keep it every second of my life, but I kept it for large patches.
Right.
And those journals helped me immeasurably because I couldn't remember hardly anything. And every now and then I would ask my brother and sister about some incident that I was fuzzy about, and they remembered nothing. So if I hadn't written things down, I don't know what I would have done. It would have been a completely different book.
Right.
So I was really grateful to have this resource. But of course, I had to go back and read them all. And then I discovered that what they were mostly about was boyfriends, 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 boyfriends. And of course, that's not what I was looking for. No. I was looking for the family nuggets. And they were in there. But I had to, you know, hack through the underbrush of these endless fulminations about my unsuitable paramours and all the rest of it to find what I was looking for. So it was a time-consuming process. But in the end, I sure was grateful that I'd written all that stuff down.
Well, Consuelo, when did you meet Jamie?
Well, when we were little.
Yeah,
I was, my mother and her mother were dear friends.
Okay.
They went to elementary school together.
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
They went
okay,
all
so
the way
I
back.
Didn't realize they went that
in
far back.
In Chile, and they both moved to New York for different reasons, but they both ended up studying acting and performing professionally as actresses in New York.
Okay.
And this was in the 40s. My mother ended up marrying the Cuban diplomat, and Felicia, Jamie's mom, ended up marrying Leonard Bernstein.
Right.
But of course, the friendship kept on going. And so throughout my life, the Bernsteins were just part of
everything.
Our lives.
Wow.
Yeah, and we traveled a lot because of the United Nations, but in between countries, we'd come back to New York and we'd get together and go to their houses. Or when we lived in Italy,
we met you in Rome.
You came and actually you stayed with us in Rome. The children while your
That's
parents.
That's when your brother beat up my brother.
So you see, it's that kind of history. And then, of course, as we got older and Felicia was there for me at a very, very difficult time in my life in New York. And so I just have this great love for Jamie, for her family, for her mother. And my mother just adored Felicia. And they just adored each other. And it was just that kind of thing. It was just, and then we kept on after her mother died. Every time I'd go to New York, I'd look Jamie up. And we just kept in touch that way. And this last time I was in New York in May, we got together. And I was so excited about her book. And then I don't know when the New Mexico idea came up.
I don't know, but it was the best idea you ever had.
I think so, too. I'm just so thrilled. I say, why don't you haven't come? You haven't done a book tour in New Mexico. Why don't you come? I'll organize it for you. Oh, boy. I never organized a book tour before. So
she did a great job, Consuelo. It was, and it's like I have a cousin in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And so it's all been so... you know, as we say in the Jewish tribe, Hamisha. It's so cozy that we're together and doing having all these adventures together. It's just
and
been
she's
great.
Meeting my friends are meeting her, and I'm well. She was in Taos. She can tell you about her Taos adventure earlier in life, but for me, I'm introducing her to my Taos.
Right.
You know, I
right.
lived here for 10 years, and I have this wonderful connection and love for Taos, and I'm being able to share it with her, and it's just a delight. I'm glad that the rest of Taos is going to be able to have a little bit of Jamie tonight.
Sure. Now, I noticed also you've done a bunch of concerts in Moab. There's a whole series that you did. So there's another Southwestern kind of connection.
That's right. Moab, Utah is my happy place. And I go there just about every year. I discovered the desert Southwest in my 20s when I drove cross country all by myself way back in the day. And fell in love with the canyon country and the high desert and everything. And then very luckily, about 26 years ago, a couple of friends of mine started a music festival in Moab. So that meant that now I had this built-in excuse to go out to this part of the country that I love so much just about every year. In the 26 seasons of the Moab Music Festival, I've missed only three.
Oh, great.
So I really go to Moab a lot. I'm headed there at the end of the month.
And you came here to Taos at some point.
Yeah, but that was a completely different circumstance. when I was early in my marriage and raising my kids, my son must have been about 4 or 5, and my daughter was about 7 or 8. And I don't know what my husband and I were thinking of, but we put together this very ambitious Southwestern tour. We rented a van,
okay,
and we made a big circle. We started in Albuquerque, and then our next stop was Santa Fe. And then from there, we came to Taos, and we went up into the mountains with a guide and a bunch of llamas who were carrying our gear and spent the night way up in the mountains with these llamas.
How crazy.
And had a fantastic adventure. And then, you know, came back down the mountain and spent a night in Taos and then moved on and had more adventures. It was a crazy trip.
Well, of course, I mean, Taos has a big connection with the Moab, but Ed Abbey was there just before. He was the editor of the newspaper here in Taos and good friends of many people in Taos.
Oh, great. The Ed Abbey connection. That's great.
And, you know, going back to this book of these photographs, some of them are by Gordon Parks, who my father was very good friends. In fact, my mother, too. My mother worked for Alan Lomax in the Library of Congress and photographed Leadbelly and Gordon Parks and all these different people.
Wow, so historic.
Yeah. Gordon Parks and Leonard friends? I know
they
he
knew
photographed
each other. Yeah, they, yeah, he photographed them. They weren't close friends, okay, but they certainly knew each other. And
well, I just wondered because Gordon did a lot of things in music too. Yeah, so So, what are the other aspects of this book that you're going to talk about? Your father also was bisexual, and you didn't know this most of the time when you were growing up, and apparently it's revealed in the book that your mother knew this when they got married.
That's right.
And actually accepted this was just part of what the relationship was going to be.
Right. And, you know, we only found that out relatively recently. There was a sealed envelope full of stuff, mostly correspondence, that we discovered. Someone in the Bernstein office discovered it in the back of a file cabinet. And it said, not to be opened until 25 years after Bernstein's death. Which it was not yet. But my brother and sister and I looked at each other and we went, oh, let's open it. So we did. And one of the items in that folder was a letter that our mother wrote to our father right around the time they got married, in which my mother writes to my father, look, I know you're a homosexual. We both know it. But we adore each other and we want to have a life together and start a family. And let's just do this thing. Let's just jump in to this grand experiment and give it our best shot. What an amazing thing to discover, because we didn't know until that moment that they had both gone into this with their eyes wide open.
It's amazing, yeah.
It is amazing.
And of course, in those times, you know, gays couldn't really come out, so it was a...
No, they couldn't. And so, I mean, it really was an experiment. And I think it was quite difficult for both of them much of the time. And yet, overall, I would say that the experiment was successful to the degree that they did, in fact, raise 3 kids and have a fantastic family life that they created for all of us. And we had so many friends and relatives who were all at our house all the time and this wonderful convivial warm environment that we all grew up in. So I would say that mission accomplished.
Maybe a little difficult, but yeah. So what about all the other people that you would meet growing up? I mean, Leonard was friends with so many different people beyond musicians, right? I mean,
oh, way beyond. Early in the book, I have the sentence, let the name dropping begin. Because, you know, when I was really little, of course, I had no idea who my parents' friends were.
No.
You don't know that when you're 5 years old. They're just your parents' friends.
You don't really care, really.
And you don't care at all. Only later did I realize, oh, it is of some consequence that we have the likes of Mike Nichols and Lauren Bacall and Richard Avedon and Arthur Miller and Isaac Stern and all these people tramping in and out of our house. And that it was a kind of amazing social and cultural environment. And looking back on it, of course, I realize there were my parents in the epicenter of mid-20th century American culture there in New York City.
Right.
And all those people were coming to our house and sitting in our living room,
right,
eating at our dining room table. So it was quite an amazing environment in which to grow up.
And, of course, your father was fairly leftist and was actually blacklisted in the 50s. He wasn't called to testify before the House on American Activities.
Yeah. And, you know, looking back on it, I'm amazed that he wasn't called to testify in front of the House on American Activities Committee, because all his friends and colleagues were.
Yeah.
The one thing that happened to him was that at one point he needed his passport to be renewed, and it was being held up by the State Department, and that was all because of all his leftist activities, and he had to hire a lawyer and generate this groveling affidavit swearing fealty to the United States, and I am not, nor have I ever been, a communist.
Right.
One of those documents. And he did finally get his passport, and then he could go off to Milan and conduct Maria Callas in La Scala.
Okay.
That was why he needed his passport. But also, the other thing that happened to him was that he had a lifelong relationship with the FBI, who were always on
following
his tail,
always.
And so in the 1980s, through the Freedom of Information Act, he was finally able to view his own FBI file. And that was when he discovered that it was 800 pages long.
It's crazy, yeah.
That is crazy. Kind of a badge of honor, if you ask
nowadays,
me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, it goes to show you that, I mean, he knew the FBI was tailing him all the time and that his phone was probably tapped, and he didn't care. He just went right ahead and spoke out whenever he felt there was an injustice or people who were being maligned. You know, he spoke out. That was the message we all grew up with. If you saw something bad, you said something.
Right.
You spoke out. You marched and you made a ruckus. And even if it got you into trouble, that's what you did. That was my dad.
Okay. So are you working on any future books, or you're going to take a break from all this?
Or? No break. Well, I'm still running around giving talks about the book that came out last year, but I am already well into something new that I'm writing.
Okay.
But, you know, it may not be such an easy business to get a publishing deal for book two, because book two will not have this built-in promotional engine that this memoir did. You know, it came out during my father's centennial year.
Yeah.
And that meant that my publisher, HarperCollins, would get a kind of free promotional ride because I was already traveling so much. And everywhere I was going for the centennial, a little book event could be worked into the proceedings without HarperCollins having to pay for anything. Travel, hotel, nothing.
Right.
So that all worked very well for them. And the new thing that I'm working on wouldn't have that ingredient.
Can you give us a hint about what it's about, or you're not ready yet?
Well, probably I shouldn't.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it to myself.
Okay, well, we'll
and
definitely
cross my fingers that one day you'll find out.
Look forward to that. Okay, well, we have to wrap up. And we're here in the studio with Consuelo Luz and Jamie Bernstein, who is Leonard Bernstein's daughter. And she's here speaking about her book, Famous Father Girl, A Memoir of Growing Up with Bernstein. So also the other things you guys should look up that are our listeners is Crescendo, The Power of Music, which is on Amazon Prime, about following three kids in this fantastic Sistema-inspired music program. And also the book Leonard Bernstein, 100, Photograph the Maestro. So thank you very much.
And thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
It's been great to have you. And
yeah, it's great to be back.
Great. This is Robin Collier of KCEI 90.1 FM, Red River Taos.